welcome to this week's Master Instructor Roundtable, where we're coming to you live. I am Wendy Batts. I am also joined by my co-host, Dr. Marty Miller. So Marty, how are you today?
Life's good, Wendy. I'm doing great. Looking forward to spending some time with you and our amazing NASM family here today.
Yes, and these are common programming mistakes that we are going to cover today. Marty, I know you and I both get a bunch of emails and a ton of questions around programming, especially when we're thinking about the model, we're thinking about our assessments. And so we are going to cover a lot of common questions that we get. However, because we are live, if you have questions, please put them in the comment section here over to the right, and we will be sure to try to get those questions answered before the end of our show today.
So Wendy, I'll jump in here first. You know, shockingly, we're going to overview the OPT model. Why not? This is the Master Instructor Roundtable. We tend to have a propensity to bring things back to the model because that's just the way our brain works. And then as you were talking about, we're going to go over the common mistakes when designing programs. And you like to say, and I get this, and I'll let you jump into it when we get there. Know your whys. Makes a lot of sense to me. And then we're going to talk about evidence-based approach versus the social media exercise that are out there. Doesn't mean there's not people out there doing it. But again, everything we do with NASM is always going to anchor back to that evidence-based approach model. Doesn't mean you can't make it fun. Doesn't mean you can't have variety with it, but you have to have the science behind it. And then don't rush your clients. They need to be in phases of training for a period of time. Doesn't mean you don't change it up within that phase, but that phase is very specific. So I'm sure we'll go into more, but let's hit these four bullet points and dig in.
Okay. So if you guys have not seen this, this is the NASM OPT model. It started out as seven phases back in the day. And we won't go into a lot of the history. However, remember, there are seven phases. And so when Marty and I talk a lot about the Master Instructor Roundtable, we break up the model into the corrective exercise specialist that used to be phase one. Now it's kind of its own thing. And we also talk performance. And because that is really working on maximum power, that was number seven. And so the bulk of our population and our clients are going to utilize corrective exercise, yes, and phases one through five. And so for that reason, we want to say, what is the client's goals? Why are they there coming to see you? What is the purpose? Is there discomfort in a joint? Is a goal to lose weight? They want to gain muscle mass. What is it specifically? So that's when we go into asking the smart questions. And then we go into obviously our assessments. And based on those assessment results, we're going to put them somewhere in this model. Usually most people have some sort of compensation. So we start them in phase one. However, because people have different goals, different timelines, we're going to just think, okay, where does it fit best? And then what's realistic for them to hit their goals? So we can say, if you give me 4 to 6 months, I can safely get you to whatever that goal may be, or maybe it's only 2 months. This will help you really be more specific with your client and safely get them to those goals.
Yeah, well said, Wendy. And you and I will always use the model as our best friend, whether it's the assessments and then tying it into a phase of training, whether it's the phases of training, teaching people why we're in that phase and tying it back to their goal. These are always things that we're going to use as, you know, key things that we're going to anchor to. So that's why we always say the model is your best friend. Make sure you utilize it and really get to understand why these phases are in where they're at. And each one has a very specific and unique task assigned to it, in a sense, if you want to look at it that way. And that's the beauty of it. The research shows that you get better results, less injuries if you undulate your program in this way, especially if you tie it back to your movement assessment.
Yeah. And I think too, remember, we're trying to build a very strong foundation. And so if you don't have a strong foundation and you build this ideal house on top and it's on sand, it's going to eventually break down. You can have all the amenities, you can have anything that you want. However, if you don't have that strong platform to begin with, over time, even though it's you spent the most money on this house and it's the best builder in the world and you've got the best doors and chandeliers and all the pretty things, think of the pretty things as power. Everybody wants to be powerful and everyone is powerful in some way. It's just, are you maximizing that? And everybody wants to have the cool house, which is like your strength. Everybody wants to be strong. Everybody wants to be ripped. Everybody wants those six pack abs. However, again, if you don't look at the inside first, all of that stuff will begin to crumble.
Right. You got to build the foundation, build from the inside out when you look at the body. And if you have that strong, stable core and the right movements, everything else does become easier, but you got to put the work in ahead of time. And these are sometimes the exercises that people don't want to do necessarily. But, you know, we've gone over this in many other podcasts, how you can slip it in, trick it in there, but you have to really focus on the science of human movement. And it's all going to start with what you see in the assessment, your correctives, and then that foundation of stable core, good balance, a lot of single leg type of exercises, multiple planes of motion. Then you get into the exercises most of the clients come in for.
Yes. I love this slide, by the way. Know your whys. Marty has his thing. I have mine. Mine is know your whys. And I really didn't tell or start saying that as much until I started to have a child or when I had a child, because Marty, you're going to go through this all over again with your grandson.
Crazy.
When they're growing up, it's, but why, but why, but why? And the thing is I love the but whys, because I always have an answer. Usually it's the correct answer. If not, I can say, I know a lot of smart people I can ask and I can come back with you with that answer. So I don't lie to people. However, what are the goals? Why are they coming to see you? That is going to help you help them stay on track. You can always reference it back. Hey, you were the one that said you wanted to be a size whatever by this amount of time. I'm trying to help you get there. Canceling your sessions, not a really good idea. Going and drinking a bottle of wine every night is not going to help you. So therefore, you can think about what is the way to bring it back to them. Then what is the what did the assessment show? What assessments are you going to do with them? Did you do the assessments that's going to give you the best bang for your buck and all the information that you need? So therefore you can say, okay, if they have compensations and you're brand new, go to your book. If you go to the book, you can use the solutions table that's in there. And it states specifically, if the feet turn outward, which means externally rotate, this is what's overactive. Foam roll and stretch that. This is what's underactive. Foam roll and stretch that. Activate that. And that will help over time. Again, 4 to 6 weeks. And then the next question, I know, Marty, you and I both get this. Well, how often do I switch that workout? I looked at the solutions table. I wrote down everything. Do I do the same workout for 4 to 6 weeks? Well, I don't know. The question is, you tell me, what is beneficial for your client? I personally have clients that like different stimulation. And if they can do a move correctly and it's not too advanced and they have some kind of background in exercise, then I usually change it up every time I see them. However, if they're struggling with one exercise, that exercise is still in there, because I'm not going to challenge something and make it harder if they can't do the basics. However, if we did something on a cable, I may now do it on the floor, such as a chest press on the cable. We may just work on a push-up on the floor, the bar, whatever. So same prime mover, different exercise.
Yeah, well, that's a great point. And I think things actually got a little worse during the Instagram craze, because you and I both have been training long enough before Instagram. People would come in with a newspaper article or, you know, maybe a video they saw or something that, you know, but now constantly they're scrolling through Instagram and the algorithm knows if they click on one exercise video, so they get more and more and more. So they truly think that they have to be, well, we did that exercise last time. And I'm like, well, yeah, you still haven't mastered it. So instead of fighting with them, you know, Wendy, you know where I'm going to go with this. Rule number two for me is give them what you want while you give them what they need. You know, okay, if they need to do bridges, I've got 6 different variations that are all around the same level. One day we do the ball bridge. One day we put them on the bench. One day we do the floor bridge. And I understand the progressions and regressions, but there are people that will not do the floor bridge 3 days in a row, even though it is absolutely where they need to be at this time. So let's just accept the world where it's at and meet, and, you know, maybe you can dig your heels in on certain things, but I would highly advise you having multiple ways to attack that same movement pattern, because sometimes in the gym, you were going to do it and then Wendy took the massage table all day long or something like that, right? So it is good to have that variability for your own sake, but most clients, they truly are stuck in that, we did that last time mode. So this is where it is.
Well, that's why it's important when you're building rapport, find out the personality. What is it that stimulates them? What do they need to stay motivated? And yes, in the template, we do have the client's choice now. We're giving them an option to tell us what they do like, and we can include that or not. It depends on what it is and how advanced it is. But you're also going to see, is it each time, each week, each month? Guys, the body starts to adapt every 4 to 6 weeks. That's why we tell you to reassess someone. So if you are doing the same thing for 4 to 6 weeks and you're not switching it up, it gets boring. You're not adding different stimulus to the body. You're not challenging yourself in all different planes and different ways, working different prime movers. You're not really helping someone to the best of their ability if it's just always doing the same thing. However, if you're virtually training or you're selling programs or something like that, it's okay to say, do this entire workout 3 or 4 times this week, as long as you feel that it would be safe, depending on what you're designing, for that person. Or, you know what, here's 4 programs I want you to do every other time for a month. Again, I don't know what you're selling. I don't know what you're doing. If it's face-to-face, virtually, you're just selling it in your business as here's a folder, you choose weight loss. There you go. That's entirely up to you guys. However, just be smart, be creative. And as Marty and I always say, start with the basics first. If you can't do the 7 fundamental movement patterns and now you're going to have them do a barbell deadlift, it is not in their best interest to do that. It's not safe until you know they mastered it.
Yeah. So for those of you just joining us today in the Master Instructor Roundtable, Marty Miller here with Lenny Batts. And we're going over some of the basics, but common programming mistakes. People get certified, jump in there, start designing programs. And then sometimes they just forget some of the most basic and or fundamental things that will keep you on track and get you and your clients the best results possible. So great points on all that, Wendy. So know your whys for sure. So extending off that, so what section of the template are you programming for, right? There's a lot of work to programming a truly innovative, but also undulated periodization type of program. And you got to look at a lot of different components, whether it's the flexibility continuum, your core balance and plyo continuum, speed, agility, quickness, one of Wendy's favorites. And we've done podcasts just on that. Then comes the bulk of the program, which is resistance, which is, you know, I would say back in the day, that's what most people came in for. But again, the advantage of Instagram and social media is people understand speed, agility, quickness, and mobility now than ever before. So I can't even say that like I used to. But the resistance training is the bulk of the program where most people think they're going to get the majority of their results. Not always the truth, because you get your cardio and all these other areas. And then the cool down. So if you are NASM certified, you know that in the flexibility continuum, there's very specific uses for stabilization training versus strength training versus power training. And the cool downs have very specific flexibility techniques. And that goes through all of this. So where are you? Know your why. What are you trying to accomplish? What phase of training are you in? And then are you following the acute variables? And that's the point. If you're not following the acute variables, you're not in that phase of training any longer. You might be sticking your toe in it, jumping back out, jumping back in, jumping back out. But the science shows that if you want that specific outcome, you have to do those acute variables.
Well, and I want to piggyback and go even to more detail into what this is saying. And I say this because as a professor that's utilizing the methodologies of NASM, I see 40 or 50 papers a week on programming. And one of the major things that I see over and over again is people are not understanding some of the concepts, and they can be challenging, but you have to dive in and spend time on them. In flexibility, we self-myofascial, we used to call it release. Now it's the technique, because we don't know what we're really releasing, but we know it works. We're down-regulating overactivity. So that's why when you're looking at the solutions table and you see something that says overactive, we're trying to get it to calm down. Then we're going to statically stretch this muscle. And Marty, you and I could have a whole, and I think we have a whole webinar or podcast on just static stretching. Static stretching is not bad when there is an overactive muscle. Stretching or static stretching, a muscle that's in a lengthened position and then going have him sprint to first base, not a very good idea. So it's important for you to also look at research that's out there, even though NASM's done a lot of it, but you have to understand it. So static stretching isn't a bad thing as long as there's an overactive muscle. You're gaining range of motion. So if you do static stretching and then you go into dynamic stretching, The definition of dynamic stretching is full available range of motion. So if you downregulated overactivity and you statically stretched it and then you did dynamic, guess what? Your range of motion is going to be greater, which means that dynamic warm-up is going to be better. So then the performance outcome is, guess what? Going to be improved. So I wanted to take a step back because each and every one of these concepts is just that. You know, it has a specific reason, as you said, Marty, a specific time, a specific reason. And you can tell I'm super passionate about it because things shouldn't be getting a bad name if you don't understand it. If you're understanding the concepts and you still are confused, then let's have the conversation. But don't just because you read it somewhere, static stretching decreases performance and it's terrible for you, I'm going to question that and ask you why. Know your whys, because I'm coming at you with that. And they, Marty and I got that from Rodney, remember?
Yes, I do. I was speaking with Rodney today, actually, of all things. But the key thing is, imagine if we didn't have static stretching. How could we ever correct a movement compensation, right? Something has to be shut down or downregulated for something else to be upregulated. So thank goodness that we have that.
Yes. And guys, if you have questions, please, now is your time. We really want, I'd rather talk to you about this versus just get this via email, because I think sometimes we don't do it justice in an email. You can't feel my passion.
Trust me, I can feel her passion through an email or text. A lot of capitalized and a lot of exclamation points, but it's all good.
Do you want to take this one?
Sure, sure. So don't rush your clients. Be creative within each phase of training and make it look like you're doing something different. But if you're trying to do stabilization endurance, you have to be there for a period of time. It just is what it is. And we do have the client's choice section in there, but I'd still say probably stick to that phase of training. If you want to do some hypertrophy muscular development for biceps or triceps at the end, not a problem. But if someone doesn't move well and their ankles are locked up, their hips are locked up, they can't stabilize their core, under client's choice, I probably wouldn't suggest depth jumps, something like that. So you got to be creative with it. Speed squats, things like that, drop to holds. There's ways to still trick that in there. But give that body, that person's body, the absolute time that is required by science to adapt to that physiological change that you're trying to get. So around 4 to 6 weeks, could be a little bit quicker depending on the person's age or experience. And if, are you seeing positive results? If not, shocker, why? Are they doing their homework? Are they doing their warm-up? Are they coming in the amount of times per week that research shows us, right? It gives you an opportunity to do a reset and speak to that client. So then just because you can doesn't mean they should. No question on that one. You ever see the gym fails on social media? There's a perfect example that we could have put right there. So what may be easy for you isn't easy for all. And sometimes that's the most simple looking things, like even external rotation for some people with a tube or elastic at a 4-2-2 tempo, you'd be shocked at the lack of ability to control that quote unquote simple motion. So that's where we are sticklers to form and technique, make sure it's executed properly. And don't feel that you need to advance the clients if they're not ready. You might be able to give them a different exercise, but just because the clock says it's been 4 weeks doesn't mean you have to put them in the next phase of training. I've always said this has made the most sense to me with martial arts and then school. You got to pass a test to get to the next level. You just because you showed up long enough, if you didn't do what you were supposed to do during those classes, right, or those sessions, if you don't pass the test, you don't pass the test. We don't just give you a participation trophy just for, hey, you've been in the gym 4 weeks, we got to move you to the next phase. Nope, sorry. With Wendy and I, you got to earn that right to get to the next level. Doesn't mean, well, we know we get people to that next level because we've done this for so long. But they have to be ready, or you absolutely will increase their chance of having a bad outcome. And that bad outcome could be an injury, soreness, frustration, etc.
Oh, and I started laughing because when you said that, my son plays baseball. You guys hear me talk about him all the time. My husband is the coach. I am the baseball mom. And at the end of the season, they don't all get trophies. They absolutely do not. We give them a bat. We put the name on it. We, a little mini bat. It's got the colors. It says our name of our team and what age they are. And everybody gets that. It's their cool leave behind, but you do not. And we tell them in the beginning, you win, we buy you a trophy. Not everybody gets a trophy. So if you stink, guess what? Here's your bat.
Wow.
So, yeah.
You go right to stink instead of going, if we don't win.
Oh yeah. Because if you're not first, you're last. Marty, haven't you got that?
Ricky Bobby.
No, Second place is the first place loser.
Man, so. I didn't know that Will Ferrell was one of
No, but guys, literally with your client, it's important for them or for you and them to be able to have the conversation. As Marty said, they have to be invested. You're trying to guide them in the journey. This is where the coaching comes into play. This is why NASM has a lot of really good, valuable information to make you even a better trainer. But the concepts, because of Instagram, because of all the things that they see, or because what I'm able to do, because I've done this for a really long time, I might think is a little bit easier than somebody that's really never worked out or hasn't worked out in 10 plus years. So I had someone come in and say, oh, planks are easy. I can hold them. And we get this all the time in our workshops. I'm a trainer. Planks are a joke. They're easy. Anyone can do them. And then I have to do them for reps, doing it the correct way, and they can't do it. So then my comment is, are they really that easy? They're easy if you cheat. They're hard if you don't. So what you might think is easy is going to be extremely difficult for someone else. And you want to challenge them to the level of difficulty. But if you know that somebody has an underactive muscle because you did the assessment, then that muscle needs to be challenged. And so if you find a really good prime mover exercise for that particular muscle group, it will be difficult with a 4-2-2 or 4-2-1-0 or 4-2-1-1 tempo. Extremely difficult. And so just because you may be in better shape doesn't mean everyone's going to be in better shape. And I think that's one thing I wanted to really stress, because I could say, look how cool this new exercise is. And I'm doing a single leg squat with a row and at the same time coming up and rotating. So I'm utilizing all these different things. Did this for the first time this actually last couple of days. I'm sore as all mess because it's something I don't do. But the person that taught me how to do that, that's an everyday exercise for him and his clients. So just always keep that in mind. And I think it's a very important it's an important thing to bring up because it is a common mistake I hear and see all the time.
Right. No, great point is, you know, anytime you do something new, you got to earn that into your program as well. So if someone was doing three sets of 12 of something and I'm going to something new, sometimes I do one set, very light load compared to what I think they can handle, just to let them learn that new movement pattern before I quote unquote load it to that same phase of training.
Marty, we could talk about programming mistakes. You know, the big thing also I want to add in there, now that I know we didn't have it on the slide, is follow the acute acute variables. The acute variables, all that means is the sets, the rep, the tempo, the intensity, anything that you can change in the program, those are the acute variables. But follow them. We did the research for you. If it says choose between 12 and 20, guess what? Choose between 12 and 20. Pick a number. Don't put 12 to 20 on your template. Choose a number between that range that you think makes sense and that your client can achieve. And if you do that at the tempo, guess what? That's already in there. And then you choose an exercise that fits within kind of the parameters. You're going to be successful. Your clients are going to be successful and your programming then becomes easier. And you know, then there's science behind why you're doing what you're doing.
Right. And I think if you, and I know Wendy and I both do this, and we didn't talk about this ahead of time, but I just know the answer. If you use your NASM lens anytime you see something, okay, and that's when Wendy and I are sorry, we'd watch you all walk through the airport and be like, oh, that person's foot turns out and that person has a low back arch. We run this through our head. That's why we understand the information. But if you see something on Instagram and you see an exercise, go through the lens. What phase of training could I use that in? Are they breaking any of the five kinetic chain checkpoints when they're doing that exercise? What level of intensity would that exercise be good for if I was to use it and copy it within my clients, right? What plane of motion is that exercise in? Can I make that a multi-planar exercise? Is it sagittal only, or could I? So this is how my brain works when I see some creative things and be like, oh, wow, I never thought of doing that. But I don't just copy and paste. I copy and insert into my toolbox for that phase of training. Mm-hmm. And every client won't get to that one, and that's fine, right? But there will be some, and okay, if that's a very advanced exercise, what are the three or four exercises that built that exercise? And maybe I can give somebody two of those exercises, like a kettlebell swing is a perfect example. We've talked about this. If you can't bridge, you can't plank, no way under God's green earth should you be swinging a kettlebell. So if you see the kettlebell swing and you want somebody to do it, but you know they can't do it, were you able to reverse engineer it to a fundamental level? So now you know you're building towards it. So that way, by the time the person gets there, you've already built the success block by block, right? So that's where if you take anything away from this one, this amazing master instructor roundtable, I would say, is just have that lens that you look at everything through, but it's always the lens of the five kinetic chain checkpoints, my movement assessments, my phases of training. Programming becomes so much easier then. You know, and Wendy, you've heard me say this years ago when we were doing live workshops together. I wouldn't go into a CVS and expect every label to be off in the pharmacy and know what to grab, right? I have to know specifically, am I looking for an anti-inflammatory? Am I looking for this? Am I looking for that? And then I got to look at the contraindications and then see if it's the right thing. Exercises are the exact same way. There's some that are going to be very, very good. There's some that could be very, very bad for somebody at that current time. That exercise might be very, very good for somebody else, but that's just like a medicine. I'm not going to necessarily take the same medicine Wendy would, depending on what doctor we saw and what our situation was. So be very discerning when you go through this, and you'll see all this come together much easier than maybe you give it credit for.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a great point. I love watching people on Instagram. I love learning new things. I love listening to people present. I love doing all of anything that I can just to get more information, because I am a person that has a busy schedule too. But then I have to go back. If somebody says something where I'm like, well, what is the research behind that? Like, I really like this person. I follow this person. But is it because it works for them? Is it something that's going to better their business? Is it something that's going to just better that person? Or is this something that really is coming out in the industry? It's something that's been researched and evidence-based. And it's like, huh, okay, totally. I get this. And it may be not something good for me, but to Marty's point, it's great for my clients, or vice versa. I think look at who you're watching, see if that person is credible. And if so, and like, even if they're not, but you love the exercise, try it and do it yourself. So you know exactly, that's what we challenge everyone to do with the model. Go through it with the acute variables, challenge these different, you know, challenge yourself with the exercises so you know what the client will really have to focus on. And then at that point, you're going to be 10 steps ahead of everyone else too, because you're building it up. Now, another plug, and I can say this because we're on NASM, but NASM Performance, they often do these videos, and it's called How Do We Get There? And to Marty's point, like, you know, we just did a few this the last couple of days where you're finding something that's very difficult for a client to do that you, most of the time would probably be in strength, max strength or power. And then what are the three to five exercises that you need to do starting in phase one to build yourself up to that? Because it's usually a multi-joint, multi-motion type exercise that's explosive. And so if that's the help you need, NASM has provided you that not only in the content that you get when you go into the online version, especially in your NASM account, but through their social media channels. So Marty and I are always going to ask you to join our podcast and then feed us with questions whenever you want us to talk about things. However, I think it's very important to realize there are so many resources out there that can really help you, especially if you're new, because it's a lot. It's a lot.
It is great stuff, Wendy. So for all of you that just joined in, thanks again for joining us today. Wendy, why don't you give these amazing people your contact information so they can continue to help create this content by giving us ideas?
Absolutely. If you guys have questions about what Marty and I covered today, or you just want to say hello, you can find me on Instagram at wendy.bats13, or you can always email me at wendy.bats@nasm.org.
And my information is coming right up on cue, dr.martymiller72 for my Instagram, and then marty.miller@nasm.org for my email. So Wendy, great idea today. This was all you. I love it. It was a great refresh on bringing back the basics, which we tend to do often here. And for all of you that joined us today, thank you so much. And of course, we can't wait to see you next week on the Master Instructor Roundtable.